Hi, my name is Tanner and I'm the host of Downward Spiral, a history podcast that looks at some of the biggest controversies and scandals of the 20th century. Today is the 43rd anniversary of the Jonestown Massacre, where more than 900 people died in a mass suicide orchestrated by Reverend Jim Jones, 300 of the victims being children and infants. As today being the 43rd anniversary, we will be diving into what happened at Jonesville and the key people involved. Let's get started. The People's Temple, better known by its informal name, Jonestown, was a remote settlement in Guyana, established by the People's Temple's Church, a Francisco-based cult under the leadership of Reverend Jim Jones. The People's Temple was formed in Indianapolis, Indiana in 1955. Though its roots and teachings shared more with Christian revival movements than with Marxism, it was purported to practice what it called apocalyptic socialism. In doing so, the temple preached that those who remained drugged with the opiate of religion had to be brought to enlightenment by socialism. In the early 1960s, Jim Jones visited Guyana, then a British colony, while on his way to establish a short-lived temple mission in Brazil. After Jim Jones received considerable criticism in Indiana for his integrationalist views, the People's Temple moved to Redwood Valley, California in 1965. In the early 1970s, the temple opened their branches in Los Angeles and San Francisco and would eventually move its headquarters to San Francisco. In the fall of 1973, after critical newspaper articles by Lester Kinsolving and the defection of eight temple members, Jim Jones and temple attorney Tim Stone prepared an immediate action contingency plan for responding to a police or media crackdown. The plan listed various options, including fleeing to Canada or to a Caribbean missionary post such as Barbados or Trinidad. Jim Jones eventually went with the Caribbean missionary post. The temple quickly chose Guyana, conducting research on its economy and extradition treaties with the United States in October of 1973. The directors of the temple passed a resolution to establish an agricultural mission there. In 1974, after traveling to an area of northwestern Guyana with Guyanese officials, Jim Jones and the temple negotiated a lease of over 3,800 acres of land in the jungle located 150 miles west of the Guyanese capital of Georgetown. The site was isolated and had soil of low fertility, even by Guyanese standards. The nearest body of water was 7 miles away by muddy roads. Jonestown's location stood not far from Guyana's disputed border with Venezuela, and Guyanese officials hoped the presence of American citizens would deter a military incursion. In the summer of 1977, Jim Jones and several hundred temple members moved to Jonestown to escape building pressure from San Francisco media investigations. Jim Jones left the same night that an editor at New West magazine read him an article to be published by Marshall Kidall, detailing allegations of abuse by former temple members. After the mass migration, Jonestown became overcrowded. Jonestown's population was slightly under 900 at its peak in 1978. Many members of the temple believed that Guyana would be as Jim Jones promised, a paradise or a utopia. After Jim Jones arrived, however, Jonestown's life significantly changed. Bureaucratic requirements after Jim Jones' arrival sapped labor resources for other needs. Buildings fell in disrepair and weeds encroached on fields. Jim Jones began turning school-time lessons into discussions about revolution and his enemies, with lessons focusing on Soviet alliance, Jim Jones' own crises, and the purported mercenaries sent by Tim Stone who had defected from the People's Temple and turned against the group. For the first several months, temple members worked 6 days a week from approximately 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., with an hour for lunch. In mid-1978, after Jim Jones' health deteriorated and his wife began managing more of Jonestown's operations, the work week was reduced to 8 hours a day for 5 days a week. After the day ended, People's Temple members would attend several hours of activities in a pavilion, including classes on socialism. Because Jonestown stood on such poor soil, it was not self-sufficient and it had to import large quantities of commodities such as wheat. Temple members lived in small communal houses, some with walls woven from choline palm, and they ate meals that reportedly consisted of nothing more on some days than rice, beans, greens, and occasionally meat, sauce, and eggs. Despite having access to an estimated $26 million by late 1978, Jim Jones also lived in a tiny communal home, though fewer people lived there than in any of the other communal houses on the property. Inside Jim Jones' house, there was reportedly a small fridge containing at times eggs, meat, fruit, salads, and soft drinks, all reserved for Jim Jones. Although Jonestown contained no dedicated prison and no form of capital punishment, various forms of punishment were used against members considered to have severe disciplinary problems. Disciplinary methods included imprisonment in a small plywood box, forcing children to spend a night in the bottom of a well, sometimes upside down. This torture hole, along with beatings, became the subject of rumor among local Guyanese. Armed guards patrolled the area day and night to enforce Jonestown's rules. For a year, it appeared the commune was run primarily through Social Security checks received by the members. Up to $65,000 in monthly welfare checks paid by the U.S. government agencies were sent to Jonestown and were signed over to the temple. In 1978, officials from the United States Embassy in Georgetown interviewed Social Security recipients on multiple occasions to make sure they were not being held against their will. None of the 75 people interviewed by the embassy stated that they were being held captive, were forced to sign over their welfare checks, or wanted to leave Jonestown. After work, when false emergencies arose, the People's Temple sometimes conducted what Jones referred to as white nights. During such events, Jones would sometimes give the Jonestown members four options: attempt to flee to the Soviet Union, commit revolutionary suicide, stay in Jonestown and fight the purported attackers, or flee into the jungle. And at least two occasions during white nights, after a revolutionary suicide vote was reached, a simulated mass suicide was rehearsed. The People's Temple had received monthly half-pound shipments of cyanide since 1976, after Jim Jones obtained a jeweler's license to buy the chemical, purportedly to clean gold. It was later discovered that in May of 1978, a People's Temple doctor wrote a note to Jim Jones asking permission to test cyanide on Jonestown's pigs, as their metabolism was close to that of human beings. It was announced in 1978 that Leo Ryan, who represented California's 11th Congressional District, said that he would visit Jonestown. Ryan was friends with the father of Bob Houston, a temple member in California whose mutilated body was found near train tracks on October 5, 1976, only 3 days after a taped telephone conversation with Houston's ex-wife in which leaving the temple was discussed. When the Ryan delegation of Leo Ryan and 19 others, made up of concerned family members of Jonestown members and various Congress members, along with news reporters, arrived in Guyana, Lane and Gary initially refused to allow them access to Jonestown. However, by the morning of November 17, they informed Jones that Ryan would likely leave for Jonestown that afternoon, regardless of his willingness to allow him in. Ryan's party, accompanied by Lane and Gary, came to an airstrip at Port Kaitama, 6 miles from Jonestown, some hours later. Because of aircraft seating limitations, only four of the concerned relatives were allowed to accompany the delegation on its flight into Jonestown. Only Ryan and three others were initially accepted into Jonestown, while the rest of Ryan's group was allowed in after sunset. That night, Ryan and his team attended a musical reception in the settlement's main pavilion. While the party was received warmingly, Jim Jones said he felt like a dying man and ranted about government conspiracies as he decried attacks by the press and his enemies. It was later reported and verified by audio tapes recovered by investigators that Jim Jones had run rehearsals on how to convince Ryan's delegation that everyone was happy and in good spirit. Two temple members, Vernon Gosney and Monica Bagby, made the first move for defection that night. In the pavilion, Gosney mistook Harris for Ryan and passed him a note, reading, "Dear Congressman, Vernon Gosley and Monica Bagby, please help us get out of Jonestown." A child nearby witnessed Gosney's act and verbally alerted other temple members. Harris brought two notes, one of them Gosney's, to Ryan and Spire. According to Spire, in 2006, reading the notes caused her and the congressman to realize that something was very, very wrong within Jonestown. Ryan, Spire, Dwyer, and Annaborn stayed the night in Jonestown, while other members of the delegation, including the press corps and members of concerned relatives, were told that they had to find other accommodations. They went to Port Kaitama and stayed at a small cafe. In the early morning of November 18, 11 People's Temple members sensed danger enough to walk out of Jonestown and all the way to the town of Matthews Ridge, completely in the opposite direction from the Port Kaitama airstrip. Those defectors included members of the family of Jonestown's head of security, Joe Wilson. While most of the Ryan delegation began to depart on a large dump truck to the Port Kaitama airstrip, Ryan and Dwyer stayed behind in Jonestown to process any additional defectors. Shortly before the dump truck left, Temple loyalist Larry Layton, the brother of Deborah Layton, demanded to join the group. Several defectors voiced their suspicions about Larry Layton's motives. Shortly after the dump truck initially departed, Temple member Don Sly grabbed Ryan while wielding a knife. While Ryan was unhurt after others wrestled Sly to the ground, Dwyer strongly suggested that the congressman leave Jonestown while he filed a criminal conduct complaint against Sly. Congressman Ryan did so, promising to return later to address the dispute. The truck departing to the airstrip had stopped after the passengers heard of the attack on Ryan and took him as a passenger before continuing its journey toward the airstrip. The entourage had originally scheduled a 19-passenger Twin Otter plane from Guyana Airways to fly them back to Georgetown. Because of the defectors departing Jonestown, the group grew in number and now an additional aircraft was required. According to the U.S. Embassy, they arranged for a second plane, a 6-passenger Cessna. When the entourage reached the airstrip between 4:30 p.m. and 4:45 p.m., the planes had not appeared as scheduled. The group had to wait at the airstrip until 5:10 p.m. when the aircraft finally landed. Then the boarding process began. Larry Layton was a passenger on the Cessna, the first aircraft to set up for takeoff. After the Cessna had taxied to the far end of the airstrip, he produced a handgun and started shooting at the passengers. He wounded Baggy and Gosney and tried to kill Dale Parks, who disarmed him after the gun misfired. On the other side of the airstrip, some passengers had begun boarding the larger Twin Otter, a tractor with a trailer attached, driven by members of the People's Temple's Red Brigade security squad, arrived at the airstrip and approached the Twin Otter. When the tractor neared within approximately 30 feet of the aircraft at a time roughly concurrent with the shootings on the Cessna, the Red Brigade opened fire with shotguns, handguns, and rifles while at least two shooters circled the plane on foot. It was estimated that there was a total of 9 shooters who came from the People's Temple to the airstrip. The first few seconds of the shooting was actually captured on a video recording by NBC cameraman Bob Brown. He was killed along with Robinson, Harris, and Temple defector Patricia Parks in the first few minutes of the shooting. Congressman Ryan was killed after being shot more than 20 times. Jackie Spire, Sung, Dwyer, Reiterman, Anthony Carteris, Boyd, Oliver, Krause, and Havers were the 9 injured in and around the Twin Otter. After the shootings, the Cessna's pilot, Tom Fernandez, along with the pilot and the co-pilot of the Twin Otter, Captain Guy Spence, and First Officer Estill Rodwell Paul, as well as the injured Monica Bagley, fled into the Cessna to Georgetown. After Congressman Ryan's departure, Jim Jones's wife made a broadcast on the public address system stating that everything was all right, and she asked all residents to return to their homes. During this time, aides of Jim Jones prepared a large metal tub with grape flavor aid poisoned with cyanide. The concoction was prepared with the help of Jonestown's in-house doctor, Dr. Larry Schnatt, a Texas native and former addict to methamphetamine who got sober with the help of Jim Jones, who subsequently paid for his college education to become a doctor. Schnatt had been researching the best ways for a person to die in advance of this foreseen mass suicide. 30 minutes later, Jim Jones made his own announcement, calling all members immediately to the pavilion. Once Temple members had made it to the pavilion, Jim Jones urged them to commit revolutionary suicide to avoid getting detained by government agencies. Jim Jones would tell the members that the congressman was dead and that it was time to have no dissent and take the next step. The Temple members began the process of passing around cups filled with cyanide and syringes filled with cyanide for infants to commit this revolutionary act of mass suicide. It's estimated that the poison took 20 to 30 minutes for adults, 5 minutes for children, and less than 5 minutes for babies. Jim Jones would go on to say this to the members.
It's never been done before, you say. It's been done by every tribe in history, every tribe facing annihilation. So be patient, be patient. Death is, I tell you, I don't care how many screams you hear, I don't care how many anguished cries, death is a million times preferable to 10 more days of this life. If you knew what was ahead of you, if you knew what was ahead of you, you'd be glad to be stepping over tonight. Death is common to people. And the Eskimos, they take death in their stride. Let's be dignified.
This was the attempt by Jim Jones to try to silence some of the people who were fearful of taking the cyanide. They were fearful because they didn't want their children to suffer. They didn't want to lay down their lives. They were confused why they had to do this, why it was necessary for them to die when they hadn't made a mistake. The crowd was surrounded by armed guards. offering members the basic dilemma of death by poison or death by a guard's hand. Cries and screams of children and adults were easily heard throughout the tape. As more temple members died, eventually the guards themselves were called in to die by the poison. Jim Jones was found dead lying next to his chair in the pavilion between two other bodies, his head cushioned by a pillow. His death was caused by a gunshot wound to the left side of his temple. The Guyanese chief medical examiner, Leslie Moto, stated was consistent with being self-inflicted. From this event would come the phrase, drinking the Kool-Aid. When Guyanese officials arrived at the Jonestown compound the next day, they found it carpeted with hundreds of bodies. When they flew in from helicopters, they said it looked like a rainbow had been laid out throughout the land. Many people had perished in the arms of each other. The death toll at Jonestown on November 18, 1978 was 909 people, a third of them children. A few people managed to escape into the jungle that day, while at least several dozen more People's Temple members, including several of Jones's sons, were in another part of Guyana at the time. In total, only 33 had survived. 43 years later, you look back and you think, what went wrong? What made Jim Jones want to have all his members commit revolutionary suicide? What made him fall into such deep psychosis that he couldn't find an escape? Was Jim Jones a drug addict? Was he just power crazy? Or did he just not want to die alone? Jim Jones was a very convincing person. He went from convincing people that he was a miracle healer to convincing people to lay down their lives. Jim Jones' sons, Jim Jones Jr. and Stephen Jones, have gone on to have a lifetime of fear and terror having to make up for their father's mistakes. Jonestown will forever go down as a mass loss of American life. As today being the 43rd anniversary, I invite you guys to get online and look up Jonestown. Read into it. Read into Jim Jones, listen to the audio recordings, and read into the victims. Learn their stories. Don't let them be forgotten. Thanks for tuning in, and join us next time as we talk about Ruby Ridge and the family of Randy Weaver. See you next time on Downward Spiral.